I'm John Kroll. Today on this special No Limits, we're going to celebrate one of Indiana's treasures, the State Fair. We're broadcasting live from the fairgrounds, where we'll be talking about many of the things that make our State Fair a great State Fair. My guests will include members from the brewing industry, the wine industry, and the fair itself. We won't be taking calls today, but you can find us online. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. And if you are at the fair, please stop by and say hello. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
And now back to John Kroll, live at the Indiana State Fair.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are doing something new and different for No Limits. We're broadcasting live from the Indiana State Fair. We're going to be talking with a lot of people who make this State Fair a special experience, and we'll talk about the reasons that it draws so many people out. We've got a slate of scheduled guests, but we also hope to have some drop-ins, some of you folks who are coming out to watch the broadcast, and we thank you all for being here. We're going to start by talking with Andy Meyer of Two Deep Brewing Company and Josh Springer of Bottoms Up about basically the beer industries, my personal favorite industries, I should say, the presence here and why this is such an important event for you. And then Josh has got a really cool new development in the industry that we need to talk about. Andy, I'll start with you.
Sure. No, thanks for having us. We're definitely excited to be here. We have a unique timing in the sense that we just opened a little over a week ago. So having our presence at the State Fair has been huge. And getting the name out there, but it's been great, as I've seen over the last few days, people coming into the brewery saying they've been to the State Fair and have been able to see the beer and wine exhibition, and it's been a huge turnout for us.
How many people have you had coming out?
Stopping by the brewery, we've had countless people coming by mentioning that they've been to the fair and seen the exhibit.
Well, and do you keep count on how many people have shown up at the exhibit? Or?
We have. The first day we had one of our employees was able to staff and kind of monitor. And put it this way, we went through a keg of our stuff just in samples alone. So we've had a few people turn out.
Hot day, thirsty people.
Exactly.
They want
exactly.
To drink some beer. Who would figure? So, Josh, tell me a little bit about what Bottoms Up does and what the product is.
Well, the product is a beer dispenser that fills the cup of beer through the bottom of the cup. And I know that sounds absolutely crazy, right?
It seems like it defies the laws of physics.
It does. Yeah. It does defy the laws of physics. And I like to tell people that it's magic, but it's really not. It's every cup has a metal ring that's crimped into the bottom of the cup, and there's a magnet that's stuck to that metal ring. And when you place it on our dispenser, it lifts the magnet away from the metal ring, puts the beer in the cup, and then when it's full, you pick the cup up, and the magnet seals against the ring, and you have a cup of beer.
And people can see this being done here at the fair.
Absolutely. It's the only way full servings are being served in the hall.
Where should folks go if they want to see this, if they want to sample Andy's beer?
I don't know the name of the hall. What's the name of the hall?
I believe it's the Grand Hall.
The Grand Hall.
The Grand Hall. And that's actually a cue. Abby Terzini has with us sort of a living slice of State Fair history, a guy who's been working here for quite a while and is shouting out cues here to help us along. So,
you have a question for us?
No,
not a question, but tell us a little bit about who our guest is here.
I'm a public address announcer here. I've been in public address since 1988, but I got my first gig out here in 1971, and I've been here every year since. I love this fair. It is a lot like public radio. There's something for everyone of every interest. And it is education. It is fun. It is more than most state fairs have. It's one of the cleanest state fairs in the country. And the people who operate this year-round are absolutely outstanding. The guests that come here come from all over the world. and from all walks of life, and not only the guests, but the people who come to display and to show things. There's constant change every single day. There's never a dull moment at the Indiana State Fair. And it has advanced and kept up with the times so very, very well, and has been a benchmark for a lot of other state fairs, especially when it comes to things like Little Hands on the Farm, separating the midways out, what we've done with Home and Family Arts, and as always, 4-H and FFA. But it's a perfect balance between agriculture, education, and entertainment.
How has it, by my math, if you started here in 1971, you have been part of this fair for 43 years now. We're closing in on half a century.
Yes.
How has it changed in that
How
time?
Has it changed? Well, in the old days, there would be automobiles driving up and down the street as well. It was not as clean or as tidy. It was a shorter fair. It has done nothing but improve in the facilities, in the programs that have been brought in here. Living history goes on constantly, whether it's the Hook's Drugstore or those wonderful people at Pioneer Village who just recently received a very high commendation from the state of Indiana for keeping living history alive. It has become a bit more of a media fair, a lot more education going on, a lot more entertainment that doesn't cost the folks to come in and see. Ironically, yesterday was Farmer's Day, and we celebrated the American farmer and the Indiana farmer, and the shows on stage were the bands America and the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. Very appropriate, I thought.
Well, and that brings up a point, because the fair has continued to grow at a time when the state itself has become much less of an agricultural force.
I mean,
we've moved more to being an urban state. We're not alone in that. Most Midwestern states have. What accounts do you think for the continuing and even growing popularity in the face of the fact that the state seems to be moving in a different direction?
Well, for one thing, Indiana is still very largely active in agriculture. We're one of the largest growers of Christmas trees, and most people don't do that, and experiment in northern Indiana. There are a lot of little things that folks don't know. The other thing is we have the greatest universities and the highest, I think one of the highest numbers of universities of any state.
Mm-hmm.
And those universities are here. In interns, and of course the presence as far as Purdue and a lot of the others. Butler was out here the other day, so many great universities. That portion, that education, kind of helps meld together that difference and expands it. Those universities have all contributed to the advancement of science, whether it be in electronics, medicine, or in the foods that we eat every year. And the fair itself is just where it all comes together. It's the melting pot. It's a little America right here.
To be deep fried.
Yeah. And deep fried.
And
it's
got to
be deep fried. Yeah. Home.
Well,
yeah.
And I also, this sets up Josh and Andy in a way, because we don't traditionally think of beer necessarily as an agricultural product, but it is.
Exactly.
It is. It's almost as if we are redefining what agriculture is and how we grow it. Can you talk a little bit about the role of the beer industry here in at the state fair?
Definitely. You mentioned something really important, agriculture and the farmers of this great state. We are excited from a beer industry to see more and more farmers and new and up-and-coming farmers take on more crops that we utilize, not only from barley and wheat, but to hops as well. So seeing Indiana kind of get on the map and able to provide that kind of raw material to us is huge. So we're definitely tied to the agriculture industry.
How big an industry is it here in the state? I mean, most of the country has seen an explosion of microbreweries and development, but this is increasingly, here in Indiana, it seems like a much larger, the whole craft beer, probably ought to, we've done shows on this before, but define what a craft beer is, too.
When you compare us to the rest of the country, we definitely have some ground to make up, but we are growing at an exciting rate. I think we account for roughly 6 to 7% of all beer sold in the state of Indiana. But craft is small, independent, people who really hone in on the art of brewing.
So, I'm sorry, we're experiencing some technical difficulties here. We're getting some feedback. Real quickly, how large a piece of the beer industry is the craft beer?
Total industry in the country?
Yeah.
We're approaching between 8-9% of a market share right now.
Eight or 9%
exactly.
for Just here in Indiana?
For that's no, that's nationwide.
Nationwide.
Indiana,
yeah.
We're just a couple percent behind, but we're climbing very fast.
Okay. And in terms of this, you know, have you started marketing, Josh, the bottoms up?
Oh, we're
process?
Yeah, we're a global company, so okay. We sell all over the world the product.
How many units do you move?
Thousands? Thousands of them. I don't have an exact number in front of me, but we just got back from Norway, did a huge festival there as a push into that segment. But it's been exciting to be here in Indy because where we're from is a small town in the sticks of Washington State, and I had a decision to make to move the company to take that next step forward. And Indianapolis is right in the middle of the country, and it's right dead center between all of our suppliers, dead center between all of our customers, and everyone here is really friendly. The cost of living is low. I've been to just about every major city in the United States, and I'd have to say Indianapolis is my favorite.
And we've got some really good beer.
Let's not forget that part. You've got some good beer. Well, that's why I'm here to help.
Exactly.
I'm here to help.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The beer is good. I'm also just curious in terms of a product like the one you're talking about that fills from the bottom up, what is the market for that? Is there a novelty or does it actually save time?
Well, to be honest, I hate that it's novel. I mean, okay. It looks really cool when it's filling up, but it is so practical. And it's my personal passion is the quality standpoint. So giving somebody a quality beer. It's not left to the hands of the server to uneducatedly pour the beer.
Okay.
You know, you get a lot of volunteer labor or somebody, an uneducated bartender, an untrained bartender. That's a better way to put
bartender.
That. You can really do some damage to your product, right?
Definitely.
And
what kind of damage could you do, Andy?
Incorrect pours. Anytime you're opening that tap, you're introducing oxygen, and so if you're incorrectly pouring it, you're just mixing oxygen, which will offset flavors and can eventually damage it. Now, granted, as you're drinking a pint, you should get through it fast.
So we could provide some news that people could actually use here.
Yes, buy bottoms of beer dispenser.
Well, there's that. There's that. But assuming you don't have access to that technology when you're at home. What is the proper way to pour a beer?
Proper way to pour is holding at about a 45-degree angle.
Okay.
And you're filling almost three-quarters of that glass at that angle. And just as you kind of hit that two-thirds, three-quarters mark, starts to slowly tip that glass up so that you can, again, you're preventing any kind of agitation going on with the beer as it enters the glass. And as the bottoms-up guys have done, and I've seen it numerous times, they have a very smooth pour. Which doesn't create any kind of agitation.
What's nice about our system is so a beer system needs to be balanced in order to get the proper flow rate so you can accomplish what Andy just described. A lot of times the system isn't balanced properly. Our dispenser puts the beer in the glass so efficiently and so well that it isn't as necessary for the system behind it to be balanced. So what normally would be blamed on a server not doing their job properly could very well have been the system behind what the server was trying to do. And by hooking up our dispenser, it takes out all that user error and all that guesswork.
Okay, and primarily the error then alters the flavor of the beer?
Well, what happens is Andy spent a lot of time
balancing it correctly, yeah.
Well, creating a beer that he wants to taste a certain way. And it should. I mean, you want to deliver that to customer because ultimately that's a sampling opportunity, and then you want them to go purchase it in the store. So,
and we should also note product loss.
Yeah, product loss is another huge one. I just got a.
Oh, you mean when it spills over?
Yeah, when it spills over, a bottoms up beer dispenser gets about 95% of beer out of the keg, and the standard in the U.S. is 70%.
Oh, yeah. So well that. That's going to be a sales point for fraternities all over the country
right
there, that 25% more beer.
Well, and you should see how fast you could rack a beer pong table by using our system. It's fastest in the world.
Oh, boy. I'm not sure this is socially or ethically responsible. But in terms of if people want to see this displayed here, and we've got a little bit of a crowd here watching the broadcast, if they have not been there, where should they go? Where should they go to taste Andy's beer?
Grand Hall.
Grand Hall.
Right across the street from the Coliseum. And Andy, where's your brewery?
Brewery, we're at 714 North Capitol downtown.
Okay, so you're right downtown.
Right on the
Coliseum.
You say
you've only been in, in business for how long?
This is our second week.
Second week in business?
Second week.
So, and you decided to launch basically in coinciding with the state fair? Was that a...
We could say that. Yeah, okay. We could say that.
All right. So
there was
no other factors in that.
It was serendipitous. Well, you are listening to No Limits, and we are broadcasting live from the Indiana State Fair. We're not taking calls for this show, but if you want to reach out to us online, you can find our email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. I am John Kroll. Again, you are listening to No Limits, where we are live from the Indiana State Fair. Please stay with us.
And now back to the Indiana State Fair with John Kroll.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are broadcasting live from the Indiana State Fair right here on Main Street. My guest right now is Jeanette Merritt with the Indiana Wine Grape Council. Jeanette, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
We've got a nice little gathering here of folks who are watching the broadcast live. I'd like to thank them all for coming out. Well, let's talk a little bit. We just had the beer guys on before you. It's fairly alcoholic, I guess, this program. Talk to me a little bit about the importance of the state fair to the wine industry.
This is the first year, obviously, that we have had beer and wine here at the Indiana State Fair, and it's something that my industry lobbied for heavily. We were fortunate to have some legislatures in the Indiana State House really push to have this recognized as part of agriculture here at the fair. The Indiana State Fair is the best showcase of agriculture that we can have here in the state. So to have our industry here so people will recognize vineyards across Indiana as part of an agricultural industry is so important, and it really has made my wineries proud, and I think all of the consumers who have come to enjoy it have really had a great time and learned a lot.
Why has it been a hard sell to get people to see beer and wine as an agriculture? It's not been a hard sell to get them to see it as an alcoholic project, but as an agricultural product, because that would seem to be a no-brainer.
It really is a no-brainer, but you know, I do understand. As a mom who comes to the state fair, this is maybe my 20th year working the state fair, 10 years as a 4-H'er. I do understand, you know, maybe that parents don't want to see a wine glass walking up and down Main Street, but to have it in the environment we have it here at the Indiana State Fair in Grand Hall, where people can go in, enjoy the wine, really, you know, get educated, learn about the products, and then go on and enjoy the rest of the fair, I think has been great for fairgoers. So definitely alleviated a lot of people's concerns, while at the same time being able to educate people about our wineries here in the state.
And if people want to go see the exhibit, what are they going to see?
When you walk into Grand Hall, the first thing you'll do is definitely be ID'd. So you need to bring identification with you, whether you look 12 or 80. They're definitely going to want to see your ID. Of course, you need to be over 21 to enter Grand Hall. You'll get a wristband, and that wristband will allow you to sample from either any of the four wineries or breweries who are there throughout the day. There are three tabs or pulls on the wristband. Each one of those pulls will cost you $5, so you can turn in one of those pulls for a glass of wine, or you can turn in one of those pulls for four samples of wine from any of the wineries or breweries who are there.
And it sounds like the number three is designed also to limit the intake any one person can have while they're here. You want people to drink responsibly.
We do, and we want, you know, there are limited options in Grand Hall. We want people to walk in and be able to, you know, choose to be able to sample, but, you know, our wineries aren't bringing all 30 wines maybe they make at home. They're bringing maybe a selection of them here that they can sample. So we do want people to drink responsibly, but, you know, there's an opportunity to sit, to relax, to enjoy the building, to look at some educational exhibits, and then go on and enjoy the rest of the fair.
And what's your favorite wine here?
I work for 80 wineries. I love all, support all. I have no favorite winery or favorite wine.
But you do have individualized taste buds.
I do. You know, okay. I do tend towards dry wine. Okay. I love dry rosé, and we make some really great dry rosé here in the state. I'm a big fan of Traminette. Traminette is our signature wine, our signature grape here in Indiana, and I think our wineries make some of the best in the country. So I'll go towards the Traminette as well. That's a white wine to enjoy whenever I'm sitting down.
And same, I'm going to ask the variation of the same question. You've been coming to this fair for a long time, 20 years, you said?
Longer than that. My first view of the fair was probably from the inside, my outside view probably wasn't until I was born. So
okay,
I've been at this fair as a 10-year 4-H-er.
Because you're
as
from
a
farm
kid.
Family,
I
right?
am. My husband and I do farm. We farm with my family. I was a 10-year 4-H-er, been working here for 20 years, and continue with my kids in 4-H coming down.
So how has the fair changed in the years that you've been coming here?
It just gets better every year. I still come to this fair with a smile on my face, day one or day 17. I love the Indiana State Fair. I still think we are a fair that is focused on agriculture and 4-H, and I don't think that changes. We are focused on youth, the brand new Coliseum, the youth exhibit, the 4-H exhibits back in the 4-H building really are still the cornerstones of what our fair is. But we've also grown. We showcase a lot of different food now. There's all sorts of different livestock, maybe. You know, llamas were not part of the state fair however many years ago I was in 4-H, but now there's those options for kids. There's all sorts of different things in buildings, and it really just grows with the time.
And in terms of the changes, I was asking Josh and Andy before, is some of it that we've had to kind of redefine what we consider agriculture, to expand the definition over time to keep the fair vital?
I think agriculture continues to grow. 40 years ago when, I was born and I started farming, our farm was corn, soybeans, wheat, and hogs. Other farms may have had some chickens and some dairy cows and a lot of diversity on their farm, but a lot of farms have had to kind of mainstream, and maybe some farmers are working with aquaculture. They're raising fish, or they're raising strawberries. They're doing melons, vineyards, obviously. So there's a lot of ways to define agriculture. There's a lot of things that fit under that big umbrella, and so much of it showcased here at the State Fair.
Abby Terzini also has another person who's got a perspective on the history of the State Fair and how it's changed over the years. Could you introduce our guest?
Yes, I do. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Nora Spitznagel, and I'm only a 9-year 4-H member. That's one of my great disappointments that I still have the 4-H license plates. And I've really been enjoying the beer and the wine exhibits. But I spend a lot of my time in Pioneer Village, and I've also been coming here since I was a wee person. And Pioneer Village and I are the same age, if anybody wants to walk over there and do the math.
So what was your first year here?
My first year that I came here was 1961.
Are a more than 50-year veteran
of
this. Same question I've been asked. How has it changed over time?
I really, just more exhibits, more, I love how the Home and Family Arts Building feels like it's grown, and especially Pioneer Village. When it started out, it was a little display under the grandstands, and now it has a whole corner of the fair and great demonstrations and music, and, I could spend every day there.
And what of the changes do you find the most exciting?
I think the infrastructure has really improved, and maybe just as a kid I didn't know where things were, but I feel like the fair is so clean, and one of my special talents is I can tell you where all the bathrooms are and things, and I feel like there are a lot more over the
now
years.
That is a dedicated fair goer.
That's the stuff
people
always want to know. And just all the live demonstrations and the music and things.
Are there any things that have disappeared over the years that you've missed?
Oh,
from the old.
Not that I can think of. Well, one thing that my mom always talks about is there used to be a great butterscotch ice cream thing in the Ag Hort building.
Oh,
that's gone. But yeah, I can't think of anything that I'm missing, at least.
And what keeps bringing you back every year?
First of all, I'm lucky enough to live close enough to here, and just even if I'm tired and think I'm not going to come, once I get here, it sounds weird, but it feels like a real happy place. There's always great people and great things to see.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your memories and your story with us. Jeanette, I'm going to ask you the same question. You said you continue coming here. You're excited on the first day, and you're excited on day 17. What is it about the fair that excites you?
Well, I have had the opportunity to work here now for 20 years in one capacity or another, in the past 10, working in the wine industry and educating people about our wineries. But I think it's watching people. I think it's watching families of all ages come and see everything this fair has to offer. It's watching, you know, little kids like we see out in the street. It's watching grandparents that may be coming with them. And each of them finding a spot in the fair that is so important to them, whether it be a memory of an antique tractor that maybe their grandpa farmed with, or they, you know, bring down an exhibit on their own, going through the Home and Family Arts Building looking for projects. There's just, I think there's just so many great things here at the fair, and watching people enjoy it and, you know, take such pride and ownership of this fair really makes me smile every day.
When you started coming here as a child, what was your first, what's the first memory you can draw up of the fair experience? Because obviously it's something that's been very important to you.
When I came as a child, my first thing we ever did at the fair was come at 6 a.m. on opening day and watch balloon liftoff. That was always my dad and mom's special thing. We would then run to the 4-H buildings to see how our projects did. We were always fortunate enough to have projects that would come out of the county level as champion projects, come down here, and you would like sprint through the building trying to find your projects and see how they did. It was also the memory of my father telling me we weren't here to ride rides, so we were never allowed to ride a ride at our county fair or our state fair. Now I know parents.
So do you ride the ride this now?
I don't let my kids. I know that sounds horrible. We don't ride rides.
I wasn't asking about your kids.
I don't ride.
Why not? Is it because of that experience?
No, it's because I'd rather spend time in the Coliseum watching hog shows or you know, working in the wine exhibit or looking around the other parts of the fairgrounds. The rides have just never been a big part of what I do at a fair. So I'm off to look at the 4-H projects and what all the kids are doing here.
Now, you mentioned the fact that this is the first year, obviously, for the wine and beer exhibit. What kind of response have you gotten from the public?
Response has been huge. As of Monday, we had about 31,000 people go through the building already, and I'm so encouraged.
So pretty much a medium-sized city.
Maybe you know, much bigger than the town that I live near next to. We've had great response. People have been very encouraged. People have really enjoyed the wine and the beer selections that have been available. We've heard people then say, I'm going to visit this winery. We've had a lot of our wineries come in from other parts of the state, and so once they're here, they taste the wines, then they want to go tour them. So that's a big part of agritourism in Indiana, and people are heading out then and planning some fall or winter trips to visit the wineries.
And Abby has with us another longtime fairgoer who wants to share a story.
And I've been coming to the fair since I was 10 years old, and I love it. It's a great place where you can bring your family and your and everything and spend the time with them. But there's a lot of changes that's happened over the years since I was little. It's like prices and everything keeps going up to where a family of four can't hardly afford to be out. And I know that we got to think of inflation and stuff like that and everything, but I think that we need to more or less think of the family that wants to bring their family out here and everything, and it should be a family gathering. Another thing, I hope that they don't continue to do the alcohol here, because when you have alcohol, I know people do it and everything, but when it's around the family, if somebody gets out of control and everything, they go causing fights and rows and everything, and we don't need that around our kids. It's bad enough that it goes on out in the world.
Can I ask, what keeps bringing you back out to the fair? I mean, you
see the animals and the events and stuff goes on, but I can't afford a lot of the concerts and stuff. And I love the Hoosier Lottery. I did try for the $90 million, but I didn't win it.
So you come back basically for the agricultural pieces of it.
Agriculture and just to take in stride everything that goes on. I love the 4-H, the animals. Mm-hmm. Ancestors had some cattle out here that they do judging on. They're brown cows, red bulls, and they're from their last name's Spiegel. They're from Ingalls, Indiana.
Okay. And you're from a farm family then?
Yes. I was raised on three farms in my entire life.
Okay, so the state fair is sort of a fixture in your life.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much for being here with us and sharing your story with us.
All right.
We really
appreciate
it.
Thank you.
Well, Jeanette, that's probably not the first time you've heard that concern. What is your response?
Disney World has alcohol, and you know, in Disney World, there's no better place that talks about families than Disney. And you know, we haven't had one incident here. Fortunately, people are consuming responsibly, and they are, you know, obviously it's contained to Grand Hall. Children aren't allowed to go in. The alcohol has to stay in there.
So you can't go buy, no. You know, or use your tabs
right.
to go in. Get a beer or a glass of wine and then go strolling around the fairgrounds.
That's right. So the alcohol is contained. And when you talk about affordability, I think the State Fair has done such great things in implementing these $2 Tuesdays, $2 entrance. And we have seen those weekdays just explode. I know crowds out here on the Tuesdays have, you know, rivaled some of our weekends. So I think there's still a lot of free stuff to do out here. And, you know, there's still a lot of affordable things for families to do. And for, you know, for those who don't want the alcohol here, it is contained to a building where families don't have access to it.
And for those who do want the alcohol, again, we ought to probably tell them how they get there, how they go about taking part.
Grand Hall is located near the administration building and the dairy bar. People normally know where to buy the grilled cheese and the milkshake, so it's right there beside the dairy bar. You can enter the building from 1 to 9 p.m., and so it's not open first thing in the morning, but it is open a little later into the evening. You can purchase a tasting or a glass of wine or beer for $5, and you're limited to 3 of those options during your time in Grand Hall.
And how many different kinds of wine?
We have 4 wineries each day that are represented. There are 80 wineries in the state. About 30 of them are here during the course of the fair. So there's 4 wineries, 4 breweries, and they each have, you know, a few selections between them.
So in terms of, and how did you go about selecting which 4 on any given day, or was it on a volunteer?
It was a volunteer basis. First come, first serve, and we had people lined up ready to sign in those spots and are happy to be here.
Now, do they have to pay to be part of this?
They do not. No, the State Fair was very generous in just wanting people to be in the building and showcase their products.
Okay, and in terms of the $5 or whatever per glass of wine or per beer, Does that go to the wineries, or does it go to the State Fair?
That is going to State Fair. State Fair was generous to purchase all of the wine.
So the industry is making a contribution then, and to some degree to address the other concern, that's another way that the costs are being kept down.
Exactly. It's very affordable for the wineries to be here. They bring their wine. The State Fair's purchased the wine and able to sell that for people to taste. And then, you know, that money all goes back into furthering education for next year and looking at other exhibits as well.
Do you have any idea how many glasses of wine you've sold?
Oh, my goodness, I don't know. But with 31,000 people, our wineries have been, I know they've been selling a lot. So people have been enjoying it.
So if all, let's say, all 31,000 of those people did the 3 at, you know, that works out to 93,000 at times 5. So we're talking about nearly $500,000. Right.
I'll trust you. I was never a good math major. That was not my favorite college
well,
subject.
There's an old joke about journalists and math. That there are 3 kinds of journalists: those who can do math and those who can't.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yes. I'll go right with that one.
which gets to this. Well, in terms of, I'm assuming then the plan is, because this is, I'm guessing, is going to be successful, that you're going to be back next year, or hoping to be back.
I hope the State Fair wants us back. You know, the General Assembly passed the legislation that allows the wine to be sold during the fair, so I'm very encouraged that this has gone well, and State Fair is going to want us to come back. And many of my wineries, I think, after hearing about the success that some of their colleagues have had down here, will then want to come back as well next year.
And do you hope that if you are back next year, you'll have more? You got a little bit less than 40% of the state's wineries. You hope you'll have more of them lined up for next year?
I do. I think we will have more wineries next year. It's an industry that continues to grow. I think we'll have more than half that will want to participate next year. Some of them are just in the really far outreaches of the state, and it's a little tough for them to get here for a day. But I think we'll have even more so people can taste even more wines that maybe they're not familiar with.
And I ask real quickly on this, in terms of that growth, What is prompting the growth of the wine industry here in the state?
People want to drink local. People are interested in you know, local wine. They want to be able to go out and see the vineyards. They want to meet the winemaker. They want to be able to go to that winery and learn about it, learn how that wine is produced. And so we see a lot of people who really are asking for local wine, and they want to be able to you know, support them. And so I think thanks to that support, it really has encouraged some industry or some growth in our industry.
We are live at the State Fair. I've been talking with Jeanette Merritt, who is with the Indiana Wine Grape Council. Because this is a live broadcast, we are not taking calls, but if you want to reach out to us online, you can do so by sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. I am John Krall. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us.
Now back to John Krall, live at the Indiana State Fair.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are live at the Indiana State Fair today. We've been talking with people who've been experiencing this fair and enjoying it for years. We're fortunate now to have as our guest Andy Klotz, who is the PR director for the State Fair Commission. Would remind our listeners, we're not taking calls today, but if you do want to reach out to us online, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, Andy, welcome to the program.
It's nice to be here. Thanks for coming out and spending the day at the fair with us.
Well, we're glad to be here. We've had a great experience. It's great to talk to people and talk about their fair-based memories and all of that. You got to be thrilled with the kind of crowd you're seeing today.
Well, the entire fair has been fantastic. Our crowds have been consistent throughout, and Jeanette hit it right on the mark when she talked about how some of our promotions have really helped to bring in some folks throughout the week that would normally come during the weekends only, especially with schools back in session so early now. But yeah, we've had nice crowds. The weather has cooperated, and it's going to be a good end to the fair, too, with the weather.
How do we that sort of sets up a question, because the fair is such a long-lasting institution. I mean, we've had people just in this hour come up and talk about how they've been coming here for 45 years, for close to 55 years, ever since they were kids, and it's clearly. What are the biggest challenges facing the fair right now, and how do you plan to meet them?
Well, you know, we always seem to adjust to whatever the circumstances are, but for years, the school start dates have been an issue for us for about 5 to 10 years now. Mm-hmm. They keep starting schools earlier and earlier, and yes, we certainly understand
and
that, but we've had to adjust.
It gets even worse, too.
And people have asked us, well, why don't you just move the fair? Well, we started the fair on August 1st this mm-hmm. year. Previously, the fair didn't start until about the third week in August. That's as recently as 7 or 8 years ago. But once you move it so far back, you are really coming into conflict with all of the county fairs, because the county fairs feed into our fair here. And so we are very cognizant of that as well. And we're probably backed up about as far as we can go. So that's still something that we need to consider and continue to look at as things change over time.
What accounts for the continued growth of the fair? The fact that we've noted the fact that it's still a fair, given the tradition and the history of the state, that is built upon Indiana's agricultural legacy. But the state itself is becoming less rural and more urban, yet the fair keeps growing.
Well, you know what? I think us staying an agricultural-based fair is what really fuels a lot of our success, because many other fairs have lost a little bit of their tradition in that area, and yet it is at the center of what we do here. We have a great, large 4-H contingent. A lot of those rural families continue to come here year after year for generations now, and that's a huge part of what we do, and we haven't lost sight of that. We are constantly trying to promote agriculture and educate those who no longer live on farms what the agricultural impact is on this state. And so we center around that, but it's interesting because as much as people love the traditions and they do come out, they go to their same food vendors, they want things in the same place, they also want to know, well, hey, what is new this year? And so we've got to continue to change it up just a little bit to keep people who have come back for years enticed to come back year after year.
What is the biggest misconception about the fair?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question, a misconception. People know us for being the hub of agriculture, the state celebration of agriculture annually. But I think that sometimes maybe people think that we are just about the food sometimes or just about the entertainment. And the thing I love about the fair is that we could pick any 10 people walking down the street here and ask them what the fair means to them or what they enjoy most about the fair, and somebody would talk about the rodeo. Somebody else could talk about the draft horse show. Somebody else could talk about coming to get all the different fried foods. And somebody else could talk about taking their kids back to the DNR pond and teaching them to fish. I mean, it's everything to everyone, and that's what I think is so wonderful about the fair.
And obviously, there was a significant challenge, obviously, with the tragedy to overcome here. How difficult was that to get past?
Well, you know, it's a part of the history of this place now. Mm-hmm. And it was a very difficult situation for everybody involved. And I will tell you that it was heartwarming to have many, many people come to help us in that time of need, mm-hmm. and tell us that they were behind us and remind us that they still love their state fair. And it certainly was something we never want to experience. We're sad that that happened. We certainly remember those people that were directly affected. But life does go on, and we have done our best to adapt. Obviously, the new Coliseum played a part in that. Our concerts are now inside the Coliseum, so weather is not a factor for our big headline concerts, and we're very proud of that. We've had tremendous feedback on the Coliseum and that renovation. So it was certainly a difficult time. It will always be with us, much like the incident in 1963 was with us and is still remembered to this day by many, many people. But it's something you overcome and you move on.
To put some context in how deep the roots of the state fair go into Indiana history, what year was the first state fair?
Well, we are the sixth oldest state fair in the country, and we began in 1852. So it's been here a while, and more significantly, the state fairgrounds has been in the same place since 1892. So when people come out here and they, we know that when things get busy on a Tuesday night or a Saturday afternoon and it takes a little time getting in here because we're kind of landlocked and we only have 15,000 parking spots on site.
It's the 19th century.
Yeah, we used to be way out in the farm fields when they established this as the fairgrounds back 100-plus years ago. So it's been an interesting evolution, but that's also part of the attraction is that this place has remained the same to a lot of people over a lot of years.
Abby, do you have a guess? No, okay. So in terms of how long have you been associated with the state?
This is my 14th fair now.
14th fair? And how has it changed in that time for you? I'm asking everybody because with these long-time institutions, I'm always fascinated by how they have to evolve.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. In my role, the biggest evolution has been staying up on delivering information digitally and trying to communicate to people in new ways to tell people what's going on out at the fair and make sure that folks get the information of what's being done, when the events are, who the concerts are, and so that's how it's affected me most directly. But the other things that have gone on for even the last 14 to 15 years is we have had a tremendous tremendous change in a lot of capital improvement projects. The thought of having a $60 million renovation in that Coliseum, mm-hmm. I can't tell you how fortunate we feel about that. And that was not even, it didn't even seem like a possibility 4 or 5 years ago. But thankfully, we were able to do some good things with the finances we had, get a good plan in place, get the support of the state legislature and the governor, and we made it happen, and now this building can be around for another 75 years when that was really a big question for us just a few years ago.
What is one of the sort of secret gems, unknown gems, things that I mean, there's so much out here that you can get lost in the totality of the experience. What's something that you think not enough people go see that is really special?
Well, you know, I wouldn't put it like that because people go, but there are so many hidden gems here, whether it's a food vendor that you just discover or something like the Hooks Drugstore and Museum, the Hooks mm-hmm. Pharmacy that's on State Fair Boulevard. It is a wonderful time for people to go in there and realize that this really is a living, breathing museum of pharmacy history, and then they have all kinds of walks down memory lane for people who want to buy candies and goods from 50 and 60 years ago. It's really neat to go in there and find some things that you will not find absolutely anywhere else. And then you can go up on the north side and discover things like Jeanette talked about a little while ago in Pioneer Village, where you have no idea where these guys rebuild these tractors from and where they get the parts and how they do that. Or you see a musical act in the stage in the back of Pioneer Village that really you don't see. It's not playing at your local pub or even most festivals unless you go to a specific bluegrass festival or something else. There are just all kinds of programming elements and little things that you can find everywhere. And a lot of people don't know. I've been here so long now that they seem normal to me, but a lot of people don't know about the DNR fishing program, or they don't go into the 4-H buildings and see the incredible furniture that those kids make and the cakes that they bake. And so at every corner of the fairgrounds, you can find something new and fresh.
And obviously, the entertainment has been a big part of the fair's legacy. How do you go about determining who's going to appear here? And I'm presuming, obviously, there's some thought given to make sure that addressing one of our drop-in guests' questions or concerns about the affordability of the fair, that there are acts that are accessible to a variety of audiences.
Well, that's one thing that we actually pride ourselves on quite a bit. We put on free concerts every night on the free stage, and these aren't just local bands. We have a Main Street stage that handles a lot of Indiana talent, which are also free concerts day after day after day, several of them per day. And then you go into the free stage area, and every night you will see some performer that is nationally known. And, for instance, we are having The Temptations tonight with Dennis Edwards. That's a great show. The Temptations have been around for 45, 50 years playing their great Motown music. That's a free show. Tomorrow night we're going to have Kansas, and Kansas has had platinum-selling albums before, so the classic rock crowd will be out tomorrow night. And on it goes with the different entertainers. So when you pay if you pay $10 to get in, which is the gate admission, your kids 5 and under are still free. And I always tell people, if you paid $10 to get in, you didn't plan very much, because we have a free day for 90% of our days or some kind of promotion. And so we think that this is a very family affordable event, because when you come out, you can be entertained all day and all night and really not have to spend a dime once you're inside the gates.
And in terms of the acts that are perennial favorites here at the State Fair, I mean, who's kind of like the Wayne Newton of the State Fair, the one that everybody comes to see?
Well, we're in a little bit of a transition stage now, because we have moved the concerts, the paid concerts, from the grandstand into the Coliseum. We've gone from a venue that seats about 14 or 15,000 people to a venue that now seats about 6,000 people for the headline concerts here at the fair in the Coliseum. And so we've got to feel that out just a little bit to see who's going to fill that kind of a venue rather than a 12,000 or 15,000 seat venue. But when we were in the Hoosier Lottery grandstand, you know, we had Keith Urban, who was extremely popular. Rascal Flatts was extremely popular. Kiss, back in 2010, I believe it was, sold out. Reba McEntire played there several years to great crowds, and other classic rock shows have done very well. So any big sized concert that you'd see at any other venue has played very well here, and yet the country acts obviously do even a little bit better at the fairs as well.
Who is the artist or performer that you've wanted to get here that you haven't been able to land?
Well, I don't know how far. I can tell you that that we were hopeful that Garth Brooks would maybe want to come here and put on a show, but he's kind of hard to get these days, and that would have been a real treat. But scheduling those headline concerts is really a scientific method, because you've got to find somebody who's touring or who can come on one specific date and then play it and be moved in and out and have a production that fits our venue. And now, thanks to the renovation of the Coliseum, we can pretty much accommodate any kind of modern production, which wasn't always the case in the grandstand or in the old Coliseum, for sure. So there's a science to it, and it has a lot to do with who's touring and who's available and what the what the guarantees are and all of that kind of thing. But we are pretty proud of the diverse lineup that we lined up this year, and we're looking forward to Jim Gaffigan rounding out the Coliseum shows on Sunday night.
We've gotten a Facebook memory from a listener named Deanne who says her favorite State Fair moment was seeing the Beatles. They didn't actually attend the concert, but waved at the limos after the show. Apparently they were standing outside and got a wave back from the Beatles. That gets to the fact that the State Fair, and we've heard this from a lot of the drop-in guests, that this becomes a part of their lives. It is a touchstone for them in their, you know, in their personal journeys. How seriously do the folks here at the State Fair have to take that kind of responsibility?
That is why we are here, exactly why we are here. We are here to create memories for folks, and that is ingrained in every employee at the State Fair. And that is what we hope to do every year, because it doesn't have to be the Beatles. It doesn't have to be that kind of a huge cultural phenomenon to create a great personal family memory. Like I say, when you take your child to go look at that giant pig in the swine barn or teach him to fish at the DNR building, that's a snapshot you're going to have for years and years. Although I will tell you that I have heard from so many people who went to that Beatles show, and it is such a huge part of our history here that I'm going to be surprised when I stop hearing about personal accounts of folks at that show.
I'd like to remind all of our listeners that we are broadcasting live from the Indiana State Fair, so the background noise you might be hearing is actual State Fair paranoia, the fact that we are there. What do you see in the future for the State Fair? Where is it going? Where will it adapt?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, too, because I think that we will never stray from our agricultural roots. Those are here permanently. But we have to continue to adapt to the cultural changes, just like with school time starting earlier. We've done our best to do that. We have to also continue to look at what our physical property is like and what we can do. Even with this Indiana Beer and Wine Exhibition now, that was a response to people's desires. We have been asked about that for years and years. Why can't I get a beer out at the fair? And so we will continue to take in all kinds of feedback, look at cultural changes, and work within our confines to adapt to what folks want.
And how much we did, obviously. One of our drop-in guests said she wasn't particularly thrilled with the beer and wine. What's been the feedback from fairgoers? Do they seem to like the change, or is there a breakdown?
Well, for somebody like that, I would invite them to explain to me anything that seems different to them about the fair, because that building has always had an exhibit in it, and if you never went in it, you wouldn't know what the exhibit is. Now it's a beer and wine exhibit, and if you don't want to have a drink or be a part of it, you won't ever even know it's there. But we've had more than 30,000 people go through it in the first 10 days. People have loved it, and we've had many, many people tell us, you know, I was really scared when you were going to bring beer and wine into the fair, but I see how you're doing it, and it's well run, and we are completely on board.
So if you had your way, they'd be back next year.
Absolutely.
It's been a good experience?
It's been great, and we expect that this will be an annual part, because it's a significant part of our agricultural story here in Indiana, and it only seems to be growing, and that's what we're here to do, is promote agriculture.
Well, that sounds like a great last word. Andy, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
I would like to thank all of my guests, Andy Meyer with Two Deep Brewing Company, Josh Springer, who was with Bottoms Up, Jeanette Merritt, who was with the Indiana Wine Grape Council, and Andy Klotz, PR Director for the State Fair Commission, and all of the many drop-in guests who were here. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.